Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
All right, and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful for every one of you who will join us tonight, who are with us. And we have our panel in studio, and I'm going to apologize in advance because the rain a little bit has kind of slowed things down, but I think we're good now. If for any reason our panel guests get cut off, I have your number. We'll try to call you back or call us right back at 657-383-0944. And that is the number for you, Facebook, as well as our participants from the Blog Talk Radio platform, to give us a call tonight. I'm not going to speak as much. I'm just going to introduce our special guests, who will introduce the rest of the panel that are with you, because they have some very, 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 very important information that will help particularly everyone, but particularly the African-American community, with an issue that is prevalent there. Presently. So, all right, we're happy about being able to introduce you to, well, introduce some and present the others. Let me say it that way. Her representation precedes her. All across the United States of America, life as we have known it has changed. And for years, though, the African-American population or community has disproportionately suffered from things like hypertension, high blood pressure, kidney disease, right, as well as many other ailments. And what was brought to light is that when this virus hit the country, disproportionately it affected the African-American community in particular. Not to say it didn't affect others, but certainly there. And it brought to light that there is a need for a stronger awareness and health education. So tonight, I'm happy to introduce our topic. Let's talk about kidney health. And I can't do it like that. My wife is a health practitioner, but I'm glad that we have with us here in-house our special guest, Ms. Lanice Campbell, who is a health educator with the Vanderbilt University Ingram Cancer Center. And she was gracious enough to come on and share with us, and she brought some friends with her. But and we have a two-hour show, so for the next about an hour and 55 minutes, we're going to engage. They will be with us as long as they can. Mm-hmm. And I need to get one of the callers back on here in just a minute. But and we'll do that while she is introducing the rest of the panel and our topic for tonight. There is one very, very popular figure in the, particularly in the religious community, in the name of the late Reverend James Moore. He was a dialysis patient. He had issues relative to what these ladies are going to be educating us about tonight. But listen to what he said. And the reality is I've been pastoring now for 26 years, and I've come to realize that it's necessary, even as a pastor, to help parishioners understand how to balance our faith with the reality of what we face in life on a daily basis. That's critical. And these ladies are just like messengers or angels, if you will, that will share with us this very, very vital information. Just for a second, listen to what the late Reverend James Moore said.
Even when the rain is when the storms of life are raging, it takes care. Can I get a witness in here? I don't know about you, but I feel something moving right now. Be not dismayed. Whatever be tied, Lord, we take care of you.
You're listening to Talk Straight. Tonight, our topic, let's talk about kidney health. Reverend told us that God will take care of you, and he will. Tonight we're going to learn that he often speaks through individuals just like us to help take care of us. That's how he does it. Not necessarily cracking the sky like thunder, but he comes in the form of angels, messengers. And I'm happy to share with you our panel tonight. We're going to get the other one on there, Ms. Nair. But let me introduce to you or present to others Ms. Lanice Campbell as she introduced herself and the rest of the panel. With her, she has Ms. Cynthia Harris is with us and Claudia, Barajas. And I'll get Ms. Nair on in just a second. I turn the floor over to you now, Ms. Campbell.
Okay. Thank you. Claudia, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Lanice. Good evening, everybody. Welcome. I'm so happy to have you all with us, and I appreciate the help from Pastor and from the radio. I think this is going to be wonderful. A lot of people is listening, and we are all going to learn wonderful information with you. I want to share with you that this program is brought to you thanks to Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center. And the mission of the Cancer Center is to alleviate cancer death and suffering through pioneer research, innovative patient-centered
and evidence-based prevention, education,
and community initiatives. The work that we do with Lanice belongs to the part of education and community initiatives. That's our job, to connect with all the communities, the African-American and the Latino community, and provide cancer prevention education and make sure we connect the community with the services available to them. So now I'm going to leave you with Lanice Campbell. She's going to introduce our distinguished speaker for today. Thank you so much to the Kidney Foundation and to Dr. David Canoer that will be doing wonderful presentation today. Thank you, Lanice.
Good evening, everyone, and I just have the privilege to introduce our two speakers today. Our first speaker is going to be Cynthia Harris. Cynthia is the Director of Program and Outreach for the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. Cynthia has been committed to community health through art, education, and research over the past 18 years. Ms. Harris received her Master of Public Health degree from Tennessee State University in 2017. Ms. Harris' career includes various research and program management roles with Emory University, Vanderbilt, Meharry, and TSU. Currently, she is the VP of Program and Outreach with Tennessee Kidney Foundation. She has extensive experience designing and implementing educational workshops in a variety of community settings for youth, women of color, faith, and organizational leaders, as well as emerging community actives, And once again, I congratulate her earlier, but I have to congratulate her again for being selected as a mentor for the Metro Arts Program. And our next distinguished guest today that we have, we have with us Dr. Davika Nair, and she's a nephrologist and physician scientist at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Her research and clinical care centers around improving kidney and cardiovascular health, as well as preserving quality of life and goal for current care among adults living with chronic kidney disease. She has a special interest in engaging with older adults with kidney disease and those with limited social and economic resources for establishing community academic partnerships. Thank both of you all today, and we're going to go ahead and get started with Cynthia.
Thank you so much, Ms. Campbell. Thank you, everyone. Forgive me, I am navigating the new technical realm that we find ourselves in with both the radio and Zoom. And getting a little feedback.
I think maybe we need to turn off all of our volume and listen to the phone,
and that might take care of it. But I will continue. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
I apologize. If you will, allow me to ask everyone that are on the Zoom, if you could kind of lower your volume a little bit, I think that will deal with it. Okay, go right. I apologize. Go right ahead.
No problem. So, again, I'm so happy to be here today. Thank you, Claudia and Lenise, for allowing me to represent the Tennessee Kidney Foundation and be a part of this conversation. For those folks joining via Zoom, I'm going to share my screen with you because I've got some great information that I hope you'll be able to share. But I'm pretty good at this, so I'm quite confident that I'll be able to make sure that everyone is able to get what they need, even if they cannot see the screen along with me. But again, my name is Cynthia Harris. I am the VP of Programs and Outreach with the Tennessee Kidney Foundation, where our mission is to empower and support those at risk or affected by kidney disease. And the vision that we hold that guides us on a daily basis is for a Tennessee where the rate of kidney disease is minimized and anybody who needs care receives that care. We are an agency that has been around since 1972. And we're still in the business of making sure that we take care of our fellow Tennesseans who are affected by end-stage renal disease. There are a couple of us on the staff. We're a small but mighty team. We've got our CEO, Heather Powell. Up until last month, we had our development director, Michael Draper. So we are actually looking for someone now. So if anyone is interested in the world of development, TKF is looking for someone to join us. And, of course, we have our administrative coordinator. Because we're called the Tennessee Kidney Foundation, I'd just like for folks to know that we do actually have a specific service area within Tennessee, and that is specifically the Middle Tennessee area, and we serve about 42 counties in Middle Tennessee. So definitely Davidson and surrounding counties, but we also take care of those folks who are out in more rural areas who have more of a challenge making sure that they can access the health care that they need. And one thing that's important to us, and we've identified as a major necessity in terms of providing aid and assistance to individuals with end-stage renal disease, meaning individuals who may need dialysis or may need to have a transplant, we found out that transportation is actually the biggest problem that they have, or one of the largest problems that can be addressed by an organization like ours. But to give you a little bit more information on the people that we serve, and what I want to do here and make sure it's clear, I'm going to talk about our agency, a little bit about what we do and who we serve, so that everyone listening in Tennessee has a better understanding of what's going on with their neighbors and what problems they face. I think so many of us have a family member with hypertension or with diabetes, and they may not be taking yes. their medicine, and they may not be following the doctor's orders and guidance about how to take care of themselves. And what they need to understand is that if they don't, they may develop kidney disease. It's a very high likelihood that if you have those two diseases, you are much more likely than someone else to develop kidney disease. And we want to do everything that we can to prevent kidney disease, but also most specifically to keep people off dialysis. So in terms of the folks served by the Kidney Foundation, what that looks like in terms of a makeup around ethnicity, we see those health disparities in kidney disease and chronic kidney disease. We see that in the folks that we serve as well. So we're about 62% of our clients are African American. The majority of our clients are over the age of 60, and, of course, all Middle Tennesseans. And specifically with Tennessee Kidney Foundation, we assist individuals who are 200% or below the federal poverty limit. What that roughly means is that any one individual making about $2,000 or less a month and has end-stage renal disease in Tennessee would be eligible for our services. It's also important to note that by developing kidney disease and end-stage renal disease, that alone also has an impact on an individual's income, resources, ability to work, and all of those things as well. So all of these interesting things are really interwoven and tied together. And, again, those two main risk factors that we like to focus on and talk to folks about, because these are things that are controllable and preventable, diabetes and hypertension. So I mentioned this briefly, transportation of all things is the big thing that we focus on, because if you do have a limited income, what we know at the Tennessee Kidney Foundation is that it can cost up to $300 a month to get to those dialysis appointments. And those appointments are life-saving, and they happen three times a week, and you cannot miss an appointment. It's not an option. There are drastic health outcomes, negative health outcomes that can result from an individual missing an appointment. So we knew that we had an opportunity here. This is an individual who is technically disabled. They may have difficulty or not be able to do any work outside of that. And, again, this is a long, draining, multiple-hour process. It is not necessarily fun or easy on the body. So even that time in between can have an impact on a person's day-to-day activities. So we want to do what we can, and taking care of that big chunk of a financial burden. If you're in town, there are some local options for you. But the further out into rural areas that you are, if you have to cross a line, a county line, it can go from maybe $50 a month to get to all of your appointments to, again, $260, $280. We actually support an individual right now, and the cost just to get to dialysis is $900 per month based on where they live and the dialysis center that they're trying to get to. So if you are already doing everything you can to manage food and housing and make sure that those things are secure, this transportation issue can totally derail your health and your plan. So, again, these are just some general concerns people have, and we know we've all been facing COVID-19. We also had some natural disasters and things like a tornado last year. All of those just make these issues much worse and much more intense for individuals with end-stage renal disease. Just to say a little bit and give a sense about what we do, we cover lots of trips. We can cover about 40,000 trips to dialysis in a year, really up to 60 at times. So that's kind of appointments versus individual back and forth trips. We meet the needs of about close to 3,000 requests for assistance each year. And we find that our services and the need for our services continues to grow annually. What that can look like for us, you know, as an agency is like $20,000 in transportation for about 250 or 260 individuals. So that's our transportation. That's kind of why we take that as an opportunity to provide assistance, and again, why it's so important, because we need to make sure people access care. We also do emergency assistance for folks, and we've had the opportunity to do some really great work with CARES funding. Again, our population of our kidney community is vulnerable, and they have been affected by COVID like so many other folks have, and are struggling with bills, struggling with nutrition. And so we have increased the typical emergency assistance that we're able to do at a smaller amount of $250 a year to some really larger programming and support. So we've been able to help individuals who have needed their mortgage paid and rent paid and utility and all of those things. We've been able to pay back rent and back mortgage payments for individuals so that they can stay housed, so that they can stay stable and continue to get the care that they need. And we're continuing to do that now with some additional assistance we've received from Metro for individuals in Davidson County. And we also, through that experience of assisting our community and being in community with people who have kidney disease, we were able to develop a new food assistance program so that we're able to have meals delivered to individuals that are appropriate for their what we call a renal diet, because individuals who are managing their kidney health do have a specific diet, do have specific dietary needs that support the dialysis process. And their health. So we knew that we, you know, when you're given lemons, you make lemonade, and our agency is definitely one that does that. So it was, it ultimately became an opportunity to find another way that we could be of assistance to individuals.
Wonderful.
I wanted to skip ahead just a little bit and kind of get at the final two things that are more of our larger community-facing offerings that we have. So like I said, we've got our transportation and emergency for our folks who are trying to get to dialysis. And we work with social workers at different dialysis centers to make sure that those individuals are enrolled in our program and they have that support as long as they need it. So it's a very real thing that people have to manage in addition to all of the other factors of life. And we share all of that to, again, really impress upon individuals the importance of managing their diabetes and managing their hypertension so that they can avoid this reality that so many of their fellow Tennesseans and potentially family members are dealing with. But we also like to do some education. We like to catch people a little early in the process and get them excited and knowledgeable about their kidney health as much as we can. And typically, when we're not restricted, we would be doing in-person kidney health screenings. Again, we've been given an opportunity to figure out how to adapt to the situation in front of us and how to move forward. So we're currently in the process of shifting that from more of our in-person screening to a virtual education program. And the exciting thing about that is that once that's done, all of your listeners don't have to come and see us in person. That would be something they could go to our website and possibly have a self-guided experience or join us in a presentation and get something very similar to what they would get in person. And we know making eye contact, making a friend, having a conversation, really connecting with individuals is a way that we get our messages across, and that's very important to us. So I just wanted to kind of, if we're doing good on time, just talk about a couple of the things that we measure, and then I will kind of wrap up this portion and turn it over to Dr. Nair. But in a typical screening, it's important that you know this for our process, what's available to you, but also this kind of helps have conversations with your doctors about when you go to them, what measures are they taking. So we always look at height and weight. Your weight and managing your health is very important in general in terms of disease prevention and health. But for individuals who do have end-stage renal disease, also managing their weight is important if they want to be eligible for kidney transplants. So it's just across the board an important fact. And, again, it's an important piece of information to help people really manage and maintain their health, make sure they're asking good questions and engaging with their health care providers. We also want to make sure that individuals are aware of and are managing their blood pressure. I know sometimes I've had folks in my family say, oh, it's just high right now. or it's high today. But what we want to know is there a pattern? And that's what your doctor wants to know, wants to help you figure out if this is actually something beyond something situational and if there's a way that they need to intervene. Is it something that can be done with nutrition, keeping it in the healthy range? Is it something that needs to be managed with medication? You know, what can we do to make sure that that we're thinking well about the importance of our blood pressure, certainly as it relates to kidney function? Another thing that we do in our screenings is we do a urine test. So we could actually tell you if your kidneys are, we could get a reading of how well they're filtering. So our kidneys, that's their main job. They keep the good proteins in the blood and in the system that we need, and any waste that we don't need, they push out through urine, and that's what we want them to do. So we test them, or they can be tested periodically in a setting like our screening or doing kind of the metabolic panel testing that you might do on an annual visit with your doctor. These are things that they can check. So in a community setting like ours, we would do a test. It's a direct way we can talk about a particular protein, albumin, showing up and how that is appearing in your urine. Is it a small amount? Is it a large amount that would concern us? And we will refer you back to your doctor for follow-up. But also, if you were in a medical setting, you most likely would get a blood test, and the doctor would check a measure called your GFR, and that's, I mess it up every time, help me, glomerular filtration rate. So how well are those kidneys doing? And I like to think about kidneys like I would a grade in school. So my parents wanted good grades. We want our kidneys to have good grades. That means we want that filtering to be at 100 if we can. But there are some natural things that might make it so that it's a little bit less than that. But my mom didn't want me getting C's and D's, right? So she wanted my scores to be above 80 and higher. That's a pretty good range. We're excited about that. Once an individual gets to 60 or just below 60 at 59, that range is considered the chronic kidney disease range. And then once we get to around 15, that is when an individual, along with some other information and testing that would be done, may be considered to have end-stage renal disease. So this is something you want to know. Just like in school, you can work on that grade. You can manage it. Knowing what your grade is currently helps you maintain it and do what you need to do to improve it. So we want you to think about your kidneys like that, too. How is it right now? Is it good? Is there something I can work on or be aware of? Are there some things that I can personally manage to make sure that my kidneys are healthy? So those are the testing and some of the things that we do. We also connect individuals with volunteer health professionals in the kidney community to really try to connect all of those dots and think about risk. Think about the fact that many African-Americans and people of color are at a higher risk or disproportionately have negative health outcomes as a result of kidney disease, and the ways that we end up in dialysis and how kidney disease affects our bodies, that's different. We know that as we age, we naturally lose some kidney function. So individuals over the age of 60 are more likely to have kidney disease, but I don't want anyone to think that just because they're under 60, they avoid it. We do have individuals that we serve who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s as well at the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. So really what we want to make sure people understand is please stay informed. Make sure that you communicate with your health provider. I know certain folks in my family are a little stubborn, and you ask them how it went with the doctor, they say, okay, we don't ask any more questions. But you really are your own best kidney advocate. So finding out, what does okay mean? Asking, doctor, did you check my GFR? What's that number? Give me some context. What does that mean? That doctor is not doing us a favor. That is a service that they're providing that we pay for. So we get to get the information that we want from that, and we get to engage. But also, like any relationship, kind of what you put into it is what you get out of it. So if you lean in and engage and get that information and ask those questions of your care provider, they can do a good job of making sure that you have the information that you need and the support and resources. Again, I'm Cynthia with the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. We do screenings and education all the time. When we're able to, we will be happy to go back to doing those in person. But in the meantime, we're going to continue to expand those offerings and make sure that that information is available virtually to all of our folks in Tennessee, because their health is important to us, health is wealth, and we want to do our part to take care of our community and really be engaged. So, again, this was just kind of an overview of some of the work that we do and hopefully laying out the importance of understanding your kidneys, what they do, and the status of your kidney health. There are lots of ways to reach out to TKF. We're available online and all social media platforms. And lastly, if kidney disease is something that is meaningful and important to folks, we also have a monthly giving campaign. If you want to make sure, help us make sure that individuals who need to get today dialysis care are able to do so, you can support us on an ongoing basis with any amount of your choosing. So thank you, everyone, for your time. And, of course, we'll be sticking around for any questions that folks might have later on. But I'll just turn it over now and now to Dr. Nair. Thank you.
Dr. Nair?
Hi, I'm here. Thank you so much for having me. I just want to make sure everyone can hear me.
Yes, ma'am. We hear you clearly.
Yes. Wonderful, wonderful. It's such a pleasure and honor to be invited to this event tonight. Thank you so much, Cynthia, for highlighting all the wonderful work that TKF does. I have worked with Cynthia closely and with Tennessee Kidney Foundation ever since my nephrology training. So I'm just really, really happy to see all the wonderful work she's doing. What I will do now is kind of building upon Cynthia's wonderful presentation. I'll go ahead and share my slides. They're just a few, and they really focus on the biology of the kidney. They focus on what things you need to worry about, what things the kidney does. And again, as Cynthia said, we're both happy to answer additional questions that you may have. So let me go ahead and see if I can share my screen here. And I will go ahead and start. Let's see. Okay. So I want to focus the brief slides I have at the end of this presentation to focus on people who already have kidney disease, which, as we heard about, is an asymptomatic disease. You might not even realize you have it. Many people with diabetes and hypertension do have it and don't know. And I think it's really important to increase awareness about kidney disease in our community. So just to give you some background, the burden of chronic kidney disease is really growing in the United States. It's approximated that 37 million adults who live in America, that's about 15% of the U.S. population, currently have some type of chronic kidney disease. That's more than 1 in 7 people. So it's a growing problem. Who in the community faces kidney disease? Well, a lot of people, but people who identify as Black or African American are almost 4 times as likely to face kidney disease when compared to white Americans. In addition, people who identify as being Hispanic or Latinx are 1.3 times more likely to face kidney disease as compared to white Americans. So while kidney disease does affect all of our communities, they disproportionately affect our communities of color. People with chronic kidney disease are also older. The most common age for someone that has kidney disease is 65 or above. There are people who are younger who have kidney disease, but again, the vast majority of people are in their 60s. So it's a problem of older adults, and it's a major problem of communities of color. Living with chronic kidney disease, as Cynthia highlighted, doesn't necessarily mean you just have kidney disease. It means that you probably have other medical conditions as well. I'm talking about diabetes, talking about hypertension. If you can see my slides, I have a little pie chart that shows the number of comorbidities that coexist in people who have chronic kidney disease. I'm highlighting this because once you have kidney disease, you're often managing complex medication prescriptions, dietary recommendations, multiple healthcare provider visits, and you need to kind of manage all of your multiple comorbidities at once, and that can certainly be a real challenge. So what do the kidneys do? Everyone's born with 2 kidneys. Each of them is about the size of your fist, and each kidney has about 1 million filters. Those million filters do a lot of things. I've highlighted a few here. They get rid of waste, and they get rid of extra volume in your body by making urine. I think we all know that. They also help control your blood pressure. So if your blood pressure is too low, your kidneys don't like that. If your blood pressure is too high, your kidneys don't like that. And your kidneys also release certain hormones that help regulate your blood pressure. So if you have a blood pressure problem, it might also mean you have a problem with your kidneys. The kidneys also control the levels of sodium and potassium in your blood. They help make new red blood cells. So if you hear that someone's anemic or has low iron, sometimes that might be a problem with their kidneys. And finally, your kidneys also control the amount of calcium, vitamin D, phosphorus, and acid levels in your blood. All of those things are important to keep your bones strong and healthy. So that's just to highlight that in addition to controlling your blood pressure, getting rid of waste, making urine, controlling your sodium and your potassium, making new red blood cells, your kidneys are also really important for your bone health. Hopefully I'm highlighting to you all of the important functions that kidneys do. Cynthia mentioned this. I'll add on to what she said. There are different stages of kidney disease. I like how she talked about it like different grades. So there's stage one going all the way up to stage five before you start dialysis. In stage one, we kind of look at the percent kidney function that you have, and that's with a blood test, often in combination with a urine test. In the urine test, we look for blood and protein as signs of kidney damage. In the blood test, we look at the glomerular filtration rate, which is your percent kidney function, which is how well your kidney filters are doing. And there's different stages corresponding to different levels of glomerular filtration. Stage one means very normal kidney function with minimal damage. Stage two is some of those filters are a little bit hurt for whatever reason. It could be high blood pressure, could be diabetes, could be polycystic kidney disease, it could be lupus. There's many causes, but depending on how bad one of those things has affected your kidney function, you might have a lower percentage of kidney function, as I've shown on this slide. The longer you have chronic diseases, usually the greater the risk you have of having kidney disease. So, and the bottom of this slide, as I said, it's people with lower percent kidney function, and that usually shows up on a blood test, and it might also show up with a urine test that shows that you're spilling more protein in your urine. Those filters are damaged, and the filters aren't able to filter in the protein properly. Symptoms of kidney disease. This is tricky. Oftentimes, early stages of kidney disease do not have symptoms. That's a big problem because people might not know that they're suffering from it. You might not notice any change in your urine output. You might not have any symptoms at all. And oftentimes, it's only when you have progressed to a more advanced stage of kidney disease that you really start having those symptoms. This really speaks to the importance of making sure you are screened for kidney problems, especially if it's an issue that runs in your family, especially if you have diabetes and hypertension, because a lot of these things you won't realize if you have them or not. Symptoms of late stage kidney disease, again, some of these are nonspecific, so they might not just be because of kidney problems, but usually in combination, they signify that you might have kidney failure. Nausea is one, low appetite, fatigue, itchy skin, sometimes a metallic taste in your mouth when you eat. Again, this is only in very advanced stages, and hopefully by this time, you would have had a good partnership with a kidney doctor who is working with you to do everything you can to keep you off of dialysis. But those are the symptoms of late-stage kidney failure. And again, it happens when these symptoms occur at the same time. Early stage, as I said, usually no symptoms, no change in urine output when it's early. Other symptoms associated with chronic kidney disease that we are learning about more in research that most people might not realize, and certainly that we didn't even realize until more recently, is that you might have functional limitations. What I mean by that is you might have physical fatigue and frailty. That's usually in more advanced stages, but we're learning that the longer you have kidney disease, the more physically weak it can sometimes make you feel. This is a chart from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, and they basically surveyed a large group of older adults and asked them how well they could get around. And the investigators found that people with more advanced stages of kidney disease had significant functional limitations. In addition to functional limitations, we're also learning that having advanced kidney disease can affect your memory and the way you think and your problem-solving skills and your cognitive function. This is new information, but we're learning again that for some reason, we don't exactly know the reason why, people who have advanced kidney disease for a longer period of time have trouble with certain mini mental status tests, trouble with memory, trouble with planning ahead, you know, certain functions that signify good brain health. That can also be affected by advanced kidney disease. So that was a lot of, you know, some scary stuff. So the important thing now is, what can I do to keep my kidneys healthy? How can I make sure that I never get to that point? And if I am on an early stage, I am empowered and strong and doing everything I can to slow down my kidney disease progression. Luckily, there are things you can do. One of the most important things is maintaining a healthy weight with diet and exercise. We have studies that show that eating a diet that's lower in red meat, so I mean lower in things like beef, pork, lamb, eating less red meat is associated with better kidney function. So eating a diet that's higher in plant-based foods is good, as well as maintaining a healthy weight. Controlling your blood pressure and your blood sugar. Those things can also be done with diet and exercise and, of course, taking medications if you need to. So avoiding really salty food, which can raise your blood pressure, avoiding refined carbohydrates like white bread, white rice, which can raise your blood sugar. All of those things can not only help keep you away from diabetes or hypertension, but they can also keep you away from kidney disease. Not smoking. We have found that people who smoke a lot of cigarettes, that cigarette smoke, the chemicals from cigarette smoke can actually damage your kidney filters. So staying away from tobacco as much as you can is a great way to keep your kidneys healthy. And finally, not taking what's called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs. You guys have seen all of these. Not taking herbal supplements. So sometimes in health food stores, you might see supplements that are not regulated by the FDA. They sometimes have toxins that can damage those kidney filters. So that would be an important thing to try to avoid. When I say NSAIDs, I'm talking ibuprofen, Advil, Aleve, naproxen, goody powder, BC powder. Once in a while is fine, wow. But if you're taking a lot every day, that can damage your kidney filters. I've had many, many patients I've cared for who had no idea that the couple, you know, 2 to 3 ibuprofen that they were taking a day for their joint pain that they were taking for months and months was actually damaging their kidneys. And then here's a myth that I want to correct. You know, I think I've heard this also growing up. 8 glasses of water a day is your goal, and that'll keep your kidneys healthy and keep things flushed. Well, I'm here to tell you that that is a myth. Certainly, we don't want you to be dehydrated, and we don't want you to not drink water, but there's no evidence that you need to get to 8 glasses of water. I want to know who came up with that. The point is, you know, don't drown yourself. No need to reach that magic 8 number. I will say, you know, when you're out working in the sun in the summer or when you're hot, certainly have water near you. I think probably in general we could all drink more water than we do, myself included, and we certainly don't want you to get dehydrated. So drink to thirst. You know, our bodies are amazing things. Our kidneys are incredibly intelligent organs. Your body will let you know if you're thirsty, and all you need to do is when you're thirsty, drink water or drink, you know, sparkling water, maybe a diet soda. Try to stay away from those regular sodas that will have high blood sugar, right? Try to stay away from sugary drinks. But certainly, if you're thirsty, that's your body's being signaled by your kidneys and hormones that are being released by your kidney that you are thirsty. So certainly drink water, but do not feel the need to kind of drown yourself with reaching that 8 glasses a day. So here's on the slide, I just kind of highlighted again a list of NSAIDs to avoid chronic use ibuprofen, Aleve, naproxen, goodies powder, BC powder, just highlighting that. And the bottom part of the slide I have here is if you have kidney disease, be sure to ask your kidney doctor about a transplant. I cannot stress this enough. I don't think that patients ask enough. I don't think doctors discuss enough. You know, getting you to a kidney transplant, if you need it, not everyone will need it. Sometimes you might be able to live with kidney disease and not have any symptoms, never see a dialysis machine, and, you know, everything's fine. Sometimes your kidney disease will progress, and you might be nearing dialysis. It's never a wrong time to ask, hey, doc, what about a kidney transplant? Am I eligible? What can I do to be eligible? What can I do to get myself on a list? What can I do to talk to my friends about people who'd be willing to donate a kidney for me? This is, you know, I cannot stress this enough. A kidney transplant is obviously not a cakewalk either, but it is a much more favorable thing to have than to be on a dialysis machine. I think we'd all agree. My job is to keep every single one of my patients off of dialysis. And for those who I can't do that, my job is to do whatever I can to get them to a kidney transplant. So if you have kidney disease and you have a kidney doctor and your doctor has not discussed a transplant with you, make sure you bring that up. It's a conversation that is never too early to have. And your doctor might say, oh, you know what, your kidney function is doing great. We're actually really far from you even having to think about that. It's still very important information for you to know. So those are really my main slides. That's kind of the main points I wanted to highlight. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about who has kidney disease in America, who disproportionately suffers from kidney disease, the symptoms associated with kidney disease, the different stages, how you can keep your kidneys healthy, and what you can do to avoid dialysis, and just hopefully I gave you some information that will catalyze some important conversations with your healthcare providers. Thank you so much for your time. Happy to take any and all questions.
Okay. If I might, Ms. Campbell, if I might interject right here, we got about 14 minutes before top of the hour. We'd like to do a station break there. But go ahead and finish your presentation, and at the top of the hour, we'll do a station break there and just bring you back in.
Okay.
All right. Cameron? Ms. Campbell, you there?
Can you hear me? I'm here.
I can hear you now.
Did you hear me?
I can hear you now.
And you're going to take a radio break, right?
Okay. At 8 o'clock. Okay. We'll stop at 8 o'clock. But go ahead from now to 8 o'clock, and then we'll let everybody know what to listen to.
Okay. I'm going to open it up for questions for those who are on Zoom if they want to ask questions.
Okay, great. Well, this would be a good place then. If you got all your presenters finished, let me just tell our listening audience, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is Talk Straight. This is an educational episode tonight, and we have some professionals on with us talking about kidney and kidney health. We're grateful for all of them. We've heard from Ms. Cynthia Harris, and we've heard from Dr. Davida Nair, and I believe we have Ms. Claudia Barajas on, I believe I'm saying that right, and Ms. Campbell's leading us. So I'm going to, but 657-383-0944, that is the number to call into the podcast studio tonight. They're opening the floor, I understand, for questions. We're joined by our co-host right now. Pastor Waller, we're going to allow them to go ahead and direct the question and answer section, but just jump in here when you need to. All right, Mr. Campbell, go right ahead.
We do have one question in the chat, which is, can high liver enzymes, fatty liver, cause harm to the kidney?
Ms. Campbell?
Great question.
Yes.
Okay, did you hear me?
Okay. We did not hear the question on
the screen. The question is, can high liver enzymes, fatty liver, cause harm to the kidney?
I can repeat that question. It is from Donald.
Yes.
Can high liver or fatty liver cause harm to the kidneys?
I'm sorry, doctor. We're getting feedback now. I know you guys are on a Zoom call, and if we can ask everyone on Zoom to kind of lower your volume a little bit, that will help the eliminate some of the feedback that we're getting here in our stomach guys here. I apologize, doctor. If you will repeat the question and continue.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear. I can hear you now. Go right ahead.
Perfect. The question was, can high liver enzymes or fatty liver cause harm to the kidney? And the answer is, fatty liver cannot necessarily cause harm to the kidney, but sometimes if that fatty liver has progressed, fatty liver cannot cause harm to the kidney, but if you have cirrhosis, which is advanced liver disease, sometimes that is associated with kidney injury. So fatty liver, no, but advanced liver disease where it has progressed to cirrhosis, yes, that can cause harm to the kidney.
Okay.
Any more questions?
I do have one, if it's okay, when you let me know when it's okay to shoot something here.
Go ahead. We're listening.
Okay. So perhaps this is directed to Dr. Nair and Ms. Harris. A lot of people want to know, at what point does the root cause of kidney disease start? Is it something about what I eat? If it's something that's genetic, is it going to automatically happen because of the family? Where does it come from? What is the root cause of it for anybody?
It's a combination of factors. Some of it could be genetic. Some of it could be diet. Some of it could be medication related.
I'm sorry. Let's do this. Whoever is navigating the Zoom, if you can ask others to mute their mics while the primary speaker is speaking, that might help cut some of the feedback off.
How about right now?
I apologize.
I can hear you much better now. Perfect.
Go ahead.
So the question I believe was, what are the different causes of kidney disease, and it's multifactorial. Some people do have a genetic predisposition.
Some people do have a genetic predisposition.
Sorry, there's feedback. Go ahead. Yeah. I don't know why.
I'm trying to unmute on Zoom and on phone.
Okay.
You can control me,
so I turn to the radio and then come and answer to the Zoom group.
I didn't hear that on the talk show here. If you could say that again, please. I apologize, Doc, for the little, I guess we're having some hiccups with the technology here.
No problem. So I think I'll type in my answer for the people who are on Zoom, but I will keep the Zoom mute while I'm answering the question on the phone. So there is a genetic predisposition for disease, particularly if people have the APOL1 gene. That is one genetic cause of kidney disease. There are other kidney diseases that have a genetic cause, polycystic kidney disease, where you have many cysts in your kidneys can have a genetic cause. Other causes are lifestyle related. If you have diabetes and hypertension, dietary non-adherence or maybe not as healthy of a diet, that can damage those kidney filters. So that is kind of like a diet and lifestyle cause. Sometimes people get kidney disease from an autoimmune cause. So if you have lupus, if you have and all kinds of other autoimmune diseases, sometimes that can also cause kidney disease. But I will say the most common cause in America for kidney disease, most common cause in the United States, number one is diabetes, type 2 diabetes, but also type 1. And the number two cause is hypertension. And I'll go ahead and type this on the Zoom chat as well. But hopefully that answered your question.
Thank you so much. Okay. Ms. Campbell, go ahead. Take the floor there.
Okay. I was trying to open it up to anyone else. Had any questions? What is a good thing?
There is one question in the chat. From my niece, and let me see if I can see it. Since 8 glasses of water a day is not a requirement, what about the recommendation to have 2 glasses of water at bedtime? I understood that if you have 2 glasses of water before bed, it decreases your risk of a stroke and or an MI.
Can you say that one more time, Claudia? I had trouble hearing the last part.
Okay.
Yeah,
So my mom is asking the question. She says, since 8 glasses of water a day is not a requirement, what about the recommendation to have 2 glasses of water at the time? I understood that if you have 2 glasses of water before bed, it decreases your risk for stroke or MI.
I'm sorry.
So was that
Claudia,
question?
I mean,
yeah.
1 second. If I apologize. We're trying to balance two different things here. If you could mute your mic and just speak directly in your phone, Claudia, I think that will eliminate the backlight, the background noise.
Okay. So let me ask it. Since 8 glasses of water a day is not a requirement, what about the recommendation to have 2 glasses of water at bedtime? I understood that if you have 2 glasses of water before bedtime, it decreases your risk of a stroke and or MI.
Well, I wish that were true. That would be amazing. Unfortunately, it's not. There's no evidence that 2 glasses of water at night reduces your risk of really anything, I think. There's no evidence that I'm aware of that drinking 2 glasses of water at night reduces your risk of stroke or MI, although that would be great if it did.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I heard the question asked, but I couldn't hear the response by Dr. Mayer.
I didn't hear the response.
It seems like
I'm sorry. This is our first trying to broadcast with the radio, and we are having some difficulties.
Right.
But her answer was that it wasn't true, that is, that necessarily she will be happy to know that that was the right answer, but she doesn't believe that is what it really is.
Yes, there's no evidence that 2 glasses of water before bed reduces your risk of a heart attack or stroke.
So there is no evidence that 2 glasses of water before bedtime will reduce the risk for a stroke.
I have a question. If someone was in kidney failure, can that be reversed?
Great question.
The question was, if someone is in kidney failure, can it be reversed? It depends on what caused it. Usually the answer is no. Usually if it's something that's been building up for a while, like if the kidney failure is from diabetes or from hypertension, the damage that's been done to those kidney cells cannot be reversed. Sometimes there are acute causes of kidney injury, like if you are really dehydrated and you're taking a lot of Advil and ibuprofen and that kind of hurts your kidneys, that can be reversed. But usually if you have kidney disease that's coming from another chronic condition, like diabetes, like lupus, like high blood pressure, the damage to those kidney filters, once they happen, is not reversible. Maybe one day we will have a drug that can erase that kidney damage, but right now we focus on slowing down further damage rather than erasing the damage that's happened.
Okay.
Can I ask, I want to ask the question, what is the in stem cell research for kidneys? Is there, what's happening with that?
So there isn't much going on with regards to stem cell research and making new kidney cells. That may be an area that is continuing to be investigated in the future. What is happening is research related to artificial kidneys, so wearable kidneys, wearable dialysis machines as well, but also like miniature kidney on chip type things and artificial kidneys where, you know, instead of getting a kidney transplant or going on dialysis, you have like a little chip that you wear. Of course, that is far from really being trialed in humans. It's just being built. It is a really exciting thing that could be cool and could be really transformative. But remember, it's really hard to replace your God-given kidneys. They do a lot. They filter a lot of blood. So while these kidney-on-a-chip things and wearable artificial kidneys are being developed, are really exciting, and you know, amazing researchers are working on it. It's probably not something that we'll see reality soon because the kidneys that you're born with, they do a lot more than I think we even
realize.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Great question.
You know, this has been absolutely a fantastic presentation and program. It's been very, very informative.
Can you, do you mind? I have one last question.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
And this last question is from Cynthia. Cynthia, thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. I've been working with health issues in the state of Tennessee for the last 10 years, and I didn't have any idea of the wonderful work that the Kidney Foundation is doing within the community. I was very surprised to see that you are providing services to 9 people per month, knowing how expensive it is. Dialysis and all the services for a person that is suffering and from the kidney. So my question is, I received several calls throughout the year from people from the Latino community asking for dialysis services, and I honestly I didn't have any idea where to refer them. I usually refer them to the federal contact centers and other organizations.
Yes. Hello?
Ms. Campbell?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can't hear her clearly. If she could mute her mic on Zoom, I think we would hear her better if she's talking. Is that Ms. Balkis that's speaking?
Yes. Hold on 1 second.
I apologize. Okay. If she can mute
her
mic
okay.
on
Claudia,
Zoom.
Claudia, they... He said, could you mute your mic on Zoom because he couldn't hear you?
Yes.
On the Zoom and just talk through the phone.
Yeah, just talk through the phone.
Talk on
your phone.
And the telephone?
Okay, and mute the mic on
Very
the
good.
Zoom.
Very good. We can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. My question is, I received several calls throughout the year from the Hispanic community asking for dialysis services, and I did not know where to refer them. Do you provide services for the Spanish-speaking community or of the community, and if they have, they are undocumented, will you anyway provide those services to them?
That's a very important question, and thank you for pointing that out. In the ethnicity breakout, I did focus on African-Americans in comparison to Caucasian or white Americans, but we do have a bit more diversity in terms of our the individuals that we provide assistance for. There are some programs that require an individual to be documented or require an individual to have a Social Security number. TKF, our agency, does not require that. What we do is we work specifically with the dialysis centers, and many times they do have clients who are, for example, Spanish-speaking. And so we rely quite a bit on the resources of that specific dialysis center in providing care to get individuals connected to us. So we don't have any limitation, and we have quite a bit of flexibility there. What we do know is another issue for individuals with end-stage renal disease, it's in terms of insurance coverage, and there's some individuals, it's been tricky. So if a person is both undocumented and uninsured, it has been very, very difficult to get them into a dialysis center and get them there regularly. Many of those individuals, unfortunately, find themselves having to go through emergency to have some form of dialysis, and that is not healthy. That is not anything that we want an individual to do. In terms of the services of emergency assistance and transportation, if that social worker gets it into us and they're eligible, we will help them. So, again, whether an individual is documented or not, or even uninsured or not, is not a problem for the Tennessee Kidney Foundation at all. But those are some issues that we're aware of from our relationship that we have with the many social workers in Middle Tennessee working directly on the ground in those dialysis centers. And even with that, we've got a great team of humans, and those social workers will do absolutely anything they can do to get a person in a seat in the dialysis center if they can. But back to Dr. Nair's point, we want to make sure that we do all we can as an agency with our education and pushing prevention so that we don't even have to think about dialysis for an individual. We can help them maintain through health and nutrition and just keeping an eye on their kidneys so that they don't even have to get to the point of being concerned about how they might be able to access that care. And truthfully, that is the best and biggest thing we can do, make sure that people don't even get to that care. But again, I will say absolutely TKF provides services across the board, and we don't have any limitations around an individual status of documentation. And again, separately, whether someone is insured or not, that is not a limitation in terms of what we do.
That's wonderful. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your answer, and thank you very much for the wonderful work that you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Yes. Thank you, guys. We greatly appreciate it. Go ahead. We're a little, if the presenters are okay, we're a little bit over time, so do you all mind staying to answer the questions? Okay.
No problem.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience. I think everything has been wonderful, but we are all learning in this process today.
Go ahead.
Great.
Question?
Yeah, I did have a question for Dr. Nair. Dr. Nair, would you say that there's been an adequate amount of African-American participation in research trials relative to many of the treatments currently and things that are still being worked on for kidney disease?
I wish I could just give you a hug for that question. It's something I care about very much. The short answer is absolutely not. There has not been nearly enough engagement with communities of color, with all the research that's being done, not just in kidney disease, but I would say across any spectrum of disease. Of course, I can only speak as a kidney doctor, so I will speak as a kidney doctor. I think we can do a lot more. I think it is on us as physicians, as investigators. It is on us to build those trusting relationships and to earn that trust. I think there are people who really care about that, myself included, constantly trying to learn how to engage better with communities of color. But yes, we are not, I think people
who identify as Black and African-American, people who identify as Latinx. Those two groups of communities in particular are not adequately represented in many of the research that we do, and that is completely on us.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Ms. Campbell, I have my co-host on. If it's okay, if he has any questions. Dr. Wally, do you have any questions for the panel? We have Dr. Nair on, Ms. Claudia Baucus, and Cynthia Harris with the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. And we're leading the conversation with Ms. Lanice Campbell, who is the educator from Vanderbilt University Cancer Center. Did you have a question for either of them? Can you hear us there, Pastor Waller? All right.
Yeah,
we cannot hear you.
Okay. I just wanted to say that, I appreciate us being on, and it just had a very fine to be an interesting question for her. First, I'd like to say, how are you doing? And then I can ask the question after that. I don't know if she can make sure she can hear me.
I think we ask everybody's doing well. Go ahead and ask your question. I can hear you. Can you all hear?
Okay, that's what I want to make sure. Because
the panel, and they can hear you as well.
Yeah, okay. What made you go into this profession?
Who are you talking to?
Who are you speaking to?
Who are you asking that, Pastor
Baller? Okay, that now who am I talking to now? Because again,
okay.
I was going to ask.
Let me start answering the question, if you may. I think I decided to go with public health because I saw the need in my community, and I have great passion to help people connect with the healthcare system in the United States. I'm an immigrant, so I see that a lot of the immigrants and people of color struggle with the system, and I'm being the mechanism to help them get what they need.
Wonderful.
Yes, I mean, that's the reason why I asked the question, because you sound so... You know, you're interesting. Just knowing that you care about people, you know, and that was valuable to be able to hear that like that. I can just believe the energy that you bring forth is that you have a great concern for people, and you just said it, and that's the reason why I wanted to at least ask that question. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. I'm glad you were able to hear us.
Yeah. All right. Can you pass that around, Pastor, to Dr. Nair and Ms. Harris? That's
Dr.
a great question.
Dr. Nair and Ms. Harris, yes. Very good question.
Yes.
Cynthia,
all right.
Cynthia,
ladies, why don't you all go from there?
Okay. This is Cynthia Harris speaking with the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. I've always been very interested and passionate in health and public health. So this is kind of a natural expression of that. I'm an artist as well. So I am interested in people's stories and the ways that people open up.
Wow.
I think their stories about
wow.
health and connection and community are all very essential to really understanding people, understanding what their health is. We can look at numbers, but we need that story. We need to understand the experience and to give context
okay.
to it to understand how we might be able to create a space for healing. So that's how I connect to it, and I've just enjoyed working with the Kidney Foundation. I have a kidney connection, an uncle who was on dialysis, so that's what brings me to this work. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you for that. Wow. Okay. Doc, go ahead. Take the floor, Dr. Nair.
Okay. Thank you. I think I share what Claudia and Cynthia said in terms of what brought me to this space. I will say that there, in terms of what brought me to being a physician, there are no physicians in my family. It was just something that I knew I liked biology, I liked science, but I really, and this is where I think we all feel the same way, I really, really enjoyed connecting with people, hearing their stories, meeting people where they are, and kind of helping shepherd people through times of need. You know, I think sickness is one of those things that's a great unifier, right? Disease does not, I mean, of course people who are
with lower income who belong to certain communities are disproportionately affected by disease, but certainly anyone can be affected by poor health. It is something that affects all of us. And when people are suffering from poor health, they are at their most vulnerable. So I found great, great personal reward and satisfaction in being able to, even in the smallest way, help someone in a particularly vulnerable time in their life. In terms of how I became a kidney doctor, I moved to Nashville from New Orleans. I lived in New Orleans for much of my life. Post-Katrina, New Orleans is where I learned how to really become a doctor. And the things that I saw the community in New Orleans face affected me deeply. And that has really been a central core that drives what I hope to continue to be able to do here in Nashville.
Very nice. Okay. Well, we appreciate you being on Talk Straight tonight, all of you. We're going to throw it to you, Ms. Campbell. But I'm glad all of you are sharing your stories right here on Talk Straight to our listening audience as well as your Zoom audience as well. And let me just say this, Ms. Campbell, before I give it to you. This show is recorded, so if anyone wants to go back and hear, Ms. Harris, if you will, give them some information to reach you, Dr. Mayer and Ms. Barkas. Give them information to contact you because it is recorded, and you can go back and to blogtalkradio.com/BFE Institute, and you can download the whole show so that you can share with others as well. I'm sorry, Ms. Campbell, go right ahead.
Oh, no, we're just fantastic. It's just a phenomenal evening that we've had here. We greatly appreciate
Absolutely.
You having us on as well. And
yes,
as we know, we're moving towards this technology phase, so we're navigating through this. And I really appreciate appreciate our presenters today. I appreciate their patience. I appreciate the information that's been shared and everything. Generally, we don't go over like this, and it's kind of exciting to me. It woke me up. But I wanted to say thank you to also for you for having us on as well. As you can see, everybody on this panel is really passionate about what we do. It's not work. It actually becomes personal for each and every one of us. Everyone is affected, has someone in their family who's affected with some type of illness. And the more information we get out, especially to the underserved and to the color community of color, it's better. I am going to release those who are on Zoom because we're over time, and I appreciate it. We have another event coming up when, Claudia, on June the 6th, is it? Can you hear me, Claudia?
Yes, I can hear you well. I would like to invite everybody to our next event on June 3rd, and it's from 7 to 8. After being inspired by all these beautiful presentations and the speakers that we have in the organizations that we are partnering with, we decided to invite Dr. Rini. He is specialized in kidney cancer. So we will continue this conversation, and I'm pretty sure we're going to see Dr. Neer and Dr. Harris too. And we will be talking about the disease itself, the cancer disease. So please stay tuned. We will be sending the information to everybody. Thank you very much for attending, and this concludes our session today.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good
bye-bye.
Night on Zoom.
Thank you so much,
Everybody's
everyone.
Stay on the radio if they like. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We do have
Thank you.
We do have a few more minutes. We have about 40 more minutes for Talk Straight here. So, ladies, you all use the time as you wish. I got a few questions for Dr. Denaire. I don't know
sure.
if you can do anything about a fat head, but I do have some other questions.
Sure.
So, Dr. Nair, one of the things I do is public information sessions as well on various things, and I appreciate what you were saying about the tremendous need to break the barriers and the fears in terms of having that real conversation with communities that are at risk to kidney
yeah.
disease. I was listening to Ms. Harris, and it sounds like there's an opportunity. And perhaps this is what she's doing already with the foundation, but for us to increase perhaps with Ms. Campbell as well, opportunities for awareness in a way that is culturally sensitive and relevant. What's your take on that?
Completely agree. I think one big barrier is that we often focus on people who already come to the health system. So we kind of wait for people to kind of show up in our clinic. And that's just not going to fly anymore, I think. I think we have to be willing to meet people where they are and really kind of do those community screenings like Cynthia was talking about. Because, again, this is an asymptomatic disease. There might be some stigma associated with it. There is, you know, well-earned mistrust, I think, with the health system that is totally justified. So I think taking those steps as a provider and taking those steps from the health system to go out into communities and to meet people where they are and to do those educational sessions and to really kind of speak to what their needs are and show that, hey, we're not just here to get your information. We're not just here to, you know, test your brain for no reason. We want to know, what are you concerned about? What are you worried about? How can we provide the information that allays those fears?
Great. Okay. Can I snowball that to Ms. Harris? Ms. Harris, I know you. I hear your passion as well. I'm like Pastor Waller. I hear your passion there. Yeah. What have been some of your experiences so far? Is there openness, or is there more we can do to create venues like this to allow people to be free and open about that?
There's absolutely always more we can do. Again, for us, one of the things I'll say about the community screenings, again, when we're able to be in person, one of the things that we do in terms of our setup is we don't host health screenings from the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. So many folks who might be listening may have already interacted with us because we go to church fairs. We go to a lot of our faith-based partners. In Nashville for sure, and certainly in Middle Tennessee, and that's actually how I met Ms. Campbell. So coming to church to do health screenings. So in that way, we get to fellowship with people. We get to have conversations. There sometimes is a gentleman who will support his wife going through the screening and his mother, maybe a mother-in-law, watch all the women in his family go through a screening, and he won't go through it himself. We get to have conversations. Did I hit close to home? But all of that to say, trust is a very real thing. We have reason within communities of color, specifically African American communities, to not trust the system. We go to that system. We tell people what's wrong, and they treat us like we don't hurt as bad as we say we are, so they don't give us the proper care and medication. There's research, I won't go too heavily into it, but when we look at birthing outcomes for Black women, regardless of education or any of those things, we still die a lot in the process of giving birth in comparison to women who are giving birth who have another ethnic background. So there are reasons for that mistrust. And as Dr. Nair was saying, it's also, you know, it's a relationship. So our providers have to make us comfortable, make us know we're heard, make us know we're understood. But one strategy that's been effective in many ways, and there are always ways for that to grow, is that face-to-face time in a space where people already trust someone. So when we come to your community event or your church event, you're already at church with your friends and family. You have, you know that the people in leadership won't bring in folks who are not trustworthy. So we have a little bit of ground to stand on when we get there. And then we believe in transparency and making sure we work really hard to maintain good relationships with volunteers. And again, Dr. Nair has volunteered with us many times. So if you come to a health screening, you get to actually sit and talk to a nephrologist or a social worker or a nutritionist who works in that field. Often we hear people say they get to talk to that doctor longer in our setting than they do when they go to the doctor for a visit. So we know at least the strategy is continuing to engage with people, meeting them where we are, looking at those opportunities where trust is already established in a place, and how can we add on to that. We know many groups and faith groups have church ministries. again, people who are invested, right, they come every Sunday. They're there all week. You can trust those folks. They screen us. They test us on our stuff, okay, and make sure that we're coming with helpful information so that that's something we can, okay, trust, and that's a hurdle we can get over together and help people. So we'll continue to do that. And, again, we're figuring out as the times are changing how to make it virtual so we can reach even more people. So even more people who are living somewhere rural, maybe folks can get together. But, we're there are always limitations, but we're figuring out more and more how do we expand our reach and what more can we do. It's a necessary conversation to continue to have in all the ways, and we want to just keep encouraging people to take care of themselves. And then lastly, we just know how oppression works on people and bodies. So if we're not bleeding, if that body part is not falling off, we're not going to the doctor. but that's what happens when people are in a space of survival. But what we want people to do, what I want folks to do, Middle Tennesseans to do, people of color to do, is not survive but thrive. Really enjoy the fullness, wow, of your life.
Wow.
So how can we do that? How can,
wow,
we have a conversation and give you what you need so you can shine and thrive? Because the world needs each and every one of us. We all have gifts to share.
Yes.
Now I'm on a roll. I'm going to be quiet.
I love it.
No.
I love it.
You're doing all right.
I am
very passionate.
I love it.
Dr.
Nick.
And I wanted to ask
well
you.
Well said.
Wanted to add to it.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Can you hear me? When we did
yes,
have
good.
The,
I apologize.
The Kidney Foundation, when they came and they did the screening, everybody was kind of surprised. They were kind of hesitant. But we had a great turnout. They would come and they would get their thing. And it got to the point, it was like, are they coming? Are they coming? And with the results of just going through those screenings, two people found out they had kidney problems, and they went to their doctors. So they caught
That's right.
it in a,
wow.
a stage that was actually good. And those people didn't normally go to the doctor. they,
right.
they just
right.
didn't go to the doctor. So, yeah, just to add to
sure.
that, just to see how great it was.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Kidney
so,
Foundation.
Ms. Kim, I was going to ask Dr. Nair, I had a parishioner 2 years ago now
yeah.
who said to me, the only reason that they don't like to go see the doctor because they all in your business asking all kind of first questions. Ain't none of that Can you speak to that, Doc?
asking all kinds of questions? Yes. Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. And yes. You know, part of it, I think, is also like with a first-time visit, it can sometimes be hard to share all kinds of personal information. But, you know, questions and answers and communicating with your patients and communication between patients and providers, that's really the core foundation of what we do. If my patient's not asking me questions about his or her health, that patient's going to not do as well. If I'm not asking my patient, hey, what about this, or I noticed this, or if I'm not doing a good job of making sure they understand what I say and making sure that I'm continuously probing if they have questions, like I make it a rule to never say, do you have questions? I never end with that. I end with what questions do you have? And I have found that leaving that open-ended really, really catalyzes more conversation and communication. Because, again, kidney disease, I kind of highlighted all the things that kidneys do. It's an overwhelming disease to have when you do have it, and it is very hard to explain. And I constantly struggle with trying to simplify it in a way that I can make sure people understand. And part of that will involve just making sure that I'm constantly making sure that, okay, do you have a good understanding of what's going on? Like, what's bothering you? Is there something that you want to talk about later? And, you know, it really requires communication. But, yes, that sometimes might turn into, way too much in my business. So it's a balance. It's a balance.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Ms. Campbell, you heard me lead with the late Reverend Moore, James Moore. And it was interesting how a lot of people that followed him in his body of work as a gospel singer and a minister, they believed what he said about God will take care of you. And somehow that, in their mind, supplemented me to listen to health educators like you, Dr. Nair, and the work, the wonderful work that Ms. Harris is doing and Ms. Barker, how do you respond to that? I know you've been working on it. You've been going through very straight, but that's very real concern.
The way I respond to him, he is taking care of you. He's providing you with education and people who can help you. He's giving them the knowledge
okay.
and the understanding to do the work. So kind of like the thing they said, they sent you the boat, the plane, and you didn't get on it, so you drowned. So he sent you where you
wow.
got you
wow.
what's in front of you. That's how I tell people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. Okay.
I like
okay.
that a lot. I like
that's
that a lot.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Doc.
I was going to say, I like what Ms. Campbell said. I think that's a great way to phrase it. I do think that faith is really important to a lot of people, and I don't see it as contradictory to anything that we do in medicine. I think, just as Ms. Campbell said, we're all kind of working together.
Right. And, Doc, that's a big barrier, balancing faith over the years throughout the social experience with many social and physical realities, and especially as they are ever-changing from one generation to the next. There seemed to be a breakdown in information generationally, and so it's almost like you're reinventing the wheel over again, and so it does help very much be able to relate to concepts and ideas that people can see even in their generation. So I appreciate that. Wow, great conversation. We appreciate all of that. I'm sorry, Ms. Pasquale, do you have any other questions for him before we move on? I'm going to turn it over to Ms. and let her.
No, she answered my question, man. I just like the energy, you know. And
okay.
it helps me to understand that the mission that I'm on, I really appreciate knowing that you have to be dedicated and devoted.
Yeah.
When you have a love for the people. So that was something that I needed to hear.
Well, all these ladies have a strong passion. I made reference to them as angels, so we're glad. I didn't know they let angels out on Thursdays, but I'm glad they came down to earth today. We're grateful for all of you. Ms. Campbell, go
yes,
ahead.
Sir.
You want to continue what? To facilitate our dialogue. It's a great conversation. We got about another 28 minutes.
Yeah. Well, they got another 20 minutes. You know what? Our dialogue lasts about an hour, and I greatly appreciate Dr. Nair and I appreciate Cynthia being willing to stay on,
yes.
and it's great when you have the energy and people asking the questions. I'm going to release them.
Okay,
thank
you.
I'm going to release them, you know, and let them go because, you know, I don't want them to not – talk to me again. I am going to let them go, and I'll stay on the line. And if you know if anybody else, I can tell you how to get in touch with both of them, and I can also
yeah.
tell you how to get in touch with Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center. And for anyone that's listening, this is not something that we do on different topics every month, about twice a month. We have topics, and so anyone is willing to join into our Zoom and also join us on the topics, and we also we'll do it for your church or your organization. Thank you, ladies. I
all
appreciate
right.
you. Thank you, Claudia.
Well,
you.
Thank you.
Before you all leave, ladies, before you leave, let me personally thank you for gracing us here on Talk Straight and extend an open invitation to you anytime you like to come back. We appreciate you. For being here. Thank you for your expertise.
It was a pleasure and honor. Thank you so much. You have a good night.
Indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gene.
Well, great conversation. And so, Ms. Campbell, this is really where
yes.
the rubber meets the road for us, because when it comes to ministry, many people
mm-hmm.
seem to be challenged and really making it relevant to the time. You see what I mean? And I think
okay.
that there's either a lack of understanding or fear about certain things that make it hard for even some preachers. I won't say everybody. Many people, and I won't just necessarily say preachers, but people, to be able to relate these important concepts to folk who haven't thought about it very much, you know? So as the health educator you are, I would certainly pray that you will have that, you know, the guidance and the energy to keep on doing that.
Well, thank you so much. As you said, it's we have the people, the information's there, but a lot of times
yeah.
we can't get the people to get the information. They won't take the time to hear
right.
it. And it's really changed a lot, too, because I used to actually go out to the different facilities and bring food.
Mm.
and
okay.
people would come.
Okay.
But, you know, with the Zoom thing, but since, you know, we had the COVID, and a lot of people are not participating, but even through just the education that we are doing here with Vanderbilt Ingram, I've had people call and tell me, oh, I got my colonoscopy. You know, that's 50 years old, never had a colonoscopy. Oh, I went to the doctor and I did this. And I had some lady call me there. Now, what should I ask my doctor? What type of, you know, things? So we're trying to empower people to be, like you said, to be, especially since we have so much disparity. Be your own doctor
right.
and just learning from how I learn. When I go to my doctor, I ask him certain questions. He kind of look at me. And I smiled, but I found out the
okay.
more knowledge you have going in, the better they treat you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I know we have, Pastor Wall and I work with a lot of young people, and I was amazed to, when I was kind of researching a little bit in preparation for the show, I was amazed to hear how many juvenile cases of juvenile diabetes and kidney disease there are. Will you speak to that a little bit and how, what are some things that we can be aware of relative to juvenile diabetes and kidney disease for young people, for youth?
No, I can't really give you the whole, because I don't have the stats and everything in front of me.
Oh,
but like
no,
being aware going on, what's happening in the community. And the more the biggest thing is that we need to go to the doctor. A lot
but,
of things preventative. And not only do we not adults go to the doctor, we don't take our children to the doctors. Children should have regular routine checkups just like we do. And not
right.
until somebody gets sick, until you start seeing,
yeah.
and then usually when people get sick, it's advanced. So if you're doing the preventive care, you can catch things at an earlier stage. And even with juvenile diabetes,
right.
if you keep your children on a regular scheduling, they'll catch it. They'll catch it a lot faster.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, let's put the oil with here's the elephant in the room. I'm guilty of it. Growing up, I ate a whole lot of sweets. I told my children one reason my teeth are tore up right now in the back because I chewed a lot of hard candy. I mean, it's just something that we do, right? And
right.
the fact that I heard talk about how sugar is a factor, right? To the kidney disease and then the hypertension and whatever, high blood pressure and what have you, things we take for granted, you know, that we don't think about, but they're real and they have an impact on
they're real.
On our, especially
and especially the African American community. I told people we all grew up eating certain foods. I'm a sweetaholic,
mm-hmm.
but after a while we have to take our head out of the sand and start saying, what changes can I make? And what
that's
can
right.
I do? And that's part of the education portions is that what changes
right.
can I make? And like you say, we start from right now, and then we can change generations down the line. You can still eat your greens, and you can still eat this, you can eat that. You may not eat it in a certain
mm-hmm.
proportion that we do, or you might even change the way
right.
you cook it. And it makes a big difference. Someone told me once, they said a lot of things people say are hereditary. They say not hereditary. You just didn't do what you're supposed to do. They said break that curse by changing, break that curse by changing the way you eat, the way you exercise.
Yeah.
You know,
sure,
we breaking
sure.
those generational
sure.
curses within our generations. But a lot of people are not willing to give up a lot of things until we get
right.
to a certain stage,
right.
unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to placate off of Pastor Wallace. He's someone who knows how it is to have to break out of a pattern of behavior or a cycle of thought and he has a book called The Flip Side. As I think about it, my son and I read it, and we discussed this, Pastor Wall. I don't think I shared this with you. But it really has a lot to do with us finding the courage within ourselves to change our lives and turning things
right
around. There's a German theologian by the name of Paul Tillich. He wrote a book entitled The Courage to Be, and then his thesis is you've got to find courage to be who you want to be and what you want to do. So, Pastor, what do you think about that?
I was trying to share this. I know that as I was just meditating on the thought and about the Word of God, and I always have to include the Word of God in anything I do today. And he said,
okay,
the Word of God is like medicine. It's like medicine made to the heart. And I was just glad I got this dose of the Word of God, which happened to become my medicine. And, and the flip side is that I went from one form of a medicine that was trying to destroy me because I had to have it, I thought. And then, I got on the other side and realized it was the Word of God that I needed to do the thing that was required in restoring the person's soul. And when I heard her talking about the thing that she was doing at some event, I'd like to find out what gave her the real energy and the desire to just want to do things. And it sounded more like she had the love for the people, more so than just the work that she was doing. So that kind of helped me to know, she didn't have that giving up spirit. She had that, I'm going to go all the way, I'm going to do much as I can to motivate the people. So I think it's very unique, man, to have someone who have a hunger and a thirst for helping people. Man, that's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're glad you're doing what you do, Miss Cameron. We appreciate you. I don't know how many people told you, but we appreciate you.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate it. And like I said, especially when the pandemic lifts up, if you know any, especially churches, I can come and do presentations at the churches, or even, I know you do your radio thing on the Tuesdays and the Thursdays. We could do something like that, and maybe just do it without even doing it through the Zoom. Just do it through the radio station. We can also do that. Well, if you know somebody or a church or something, they want to gather their members together on a Saturday morning. We do like 11 to 12 one Saturday morning, and we want to talk about a particular topic. And I pretty much, my topics are cancer-related, the colon cancer, prostate cancer.
Okay.
We just finished one on oral cancers. That the thing that topically that hits African-Americans disproportionately.
Yeah.
We can talk about it. We can give you information about it and things like that, because that's where we want to reach out. But if it's something else, kick it over to me and we see what we can do, because not only do I work with Vanderbilt as a health educator, I'm also the wellness director of my church, and I'm also like on the board of the Cervical Cancer Coalition. So we try to get people to get information. Uh-huh.
Let me say this. I'm an insurance producer, and we're just starting to get into Medicare and advance various forms of Medicare insurance and what have you. And it's interesting, there are people who are disabled because of their diabetes and what have you. I'd love to do something with you. We'll get together and see how we can do an informative session on that, because that's a very serious reality. And many people qualify for Medicare because of that, and Medicaid as well. So the diabetes-related illnesses, I'm trying to say.
Okay, let me know, and we can do something on it. And I see, can I, this
sure.
would be with outside of my realm of Vanderbilt, but I can still do it. And see, can I get somebody to speak on the diabetes and stuff as well?
Yes,
so the work doesn't just stop there.
Right. No, it doesn't. And I like the way Pastor Wallace said, you're not doing this just because it's a job. You're doing it because you love it. You can't beat that, can you, Pat? But someone does.
It's personal. I had sister, 32-year-old, died from lung cancer. A brother, 45-year-old, died from lung cancer. And then I had another sister at 45. She died from breast cancer. Now, all of them were diagnosed in late stages, and that's a lot of it has to do with health disparities and things like that, and not doing some of the things that we needed to do. And it was kind of like, wow, these lives have been shuffled out at an early age. And so, honestly, I kind of, you know, and I moved from Texas to Tennessee, back to Tennessee from Texas. And I have to admit, my pastor kind of drug me into it. I was like, I was coming here to do furniture. I'm going to come in here and take care of mama. But I got caught up in it. And when I started seeing the disparities within it, African-American community, it kind of blew my mind. And then I connected with Claudia at Vanderbilt, and, you know, she hired me as a health educator. So that's how I got started.
Well, we appreciate it. I mean, Pastor, go ahead. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. Well, Pastor Wallace.
Huh?
No, go ahead.
Hey,
what are you going to say? I thought you were saying.
Yeah, I'm just listening to her and listening to the conversation, man. It's just interesting, period. When I meditate on things, you know, it have a tendency to bring forth some good information from it, and that's what happened. I said, well, let me make sure I don't forget to ask that question. So it's so much wrapped up in it, and then we're talking about medicine here. And, of course, you know, you're sharing about my book, you know, and what's happening in my book. It's a thing where I dealt with a lot of addictions, you know, people who have addictions. And a lot of times they're shaped up as a person that's sick. And, you know, the Word of God, I go back to the Word of God that says that the Lord Jesus himself didn't come for the righteous, but, he came for the people that were sick, the sinners, and they were out there sick.
That's
right. No fault of their own.
Right.
And I was just one of those persons, you know, that was out there like that. So I just wanted to know from her where did she get that energy from, and then she let it be known. And then she came back and mentioned some of the people, her loved ones, that caused it also increase. It enhanced her desire. And so when I think about my community and all the people that are hurting in that particular arena that I'm in, oh, man, it just gives me a greater desire to say don't give up on them because they need someone who knows something about a particular issue and willing to help. And that's what I like right there. So, I just appreciate it. You know, the energy that she put out there.
Well, I know she did, but I'm not going to turn because she blessed my soul. So we ain't going to just let you go there, Miss Cameron. You stuck with us now. You stuck with us now. No, we appreciate
That's
it.
Okay.
And I know you're busy, what you do. But we're certainly going to have you back again and to do some things together. As both you and Pastor Wallace stand, the need is great. And I think the others were saying that as well. They recognize that more than just medicine, the need is really important to educate people, empower them with knowledge and information. You know?
What does the Bible say?
The Bible. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. You're about to preach over now. Go on. What's he going to say?
Said that, you know, a lack of knowledge. Sometimes we perish because of lack
That's
of
it.
Knowledge. And sometimes, and I hear people all the time, well, you know, God gonna take care of me. And I said, you know, God is God. I'm a believer. And I'm telling you, God gonna take care of me too. But I'm gonna go to that doctor that the gods can still with their knowledge and treat me for what I need. And I'm gonna trust the Lord that he's doing what he's supposed to do. And the medication that they're doing is gonna be right and I'm going to do the things that I can do to make a difference and trust the Lord to help me with it. That is God taking care of you.
Well, I heard one writer say it like this. Wisdom is the principal thing. Huh? Get
yes.
wisdom.
Yes.
And all I get, the Bible says. What did it say, Pastor? What did it say, Pastor? Help me, man. Help me.
It said get some understanding. Get understanding.
Get an understanding. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
All you get right. it.
Well, I got this little woman in my house. She's going to be turning 95 in November, and I got to tend to her for a little bit. That's my mom.
Yes,
and,
ma'am. Thank you.
She'll be 95 in November. That's a blessing. Okay,
yes,
awesome. I will.
Well, thank
I
you
will.
Very much.
I will.
Thank you very much for being with
us. And let me ask you, how many of you have attending on the radio tonight? Do you know how many participants?
I will go back and look a little later and look at that data from the podcast.
Okay, fantastic. Right. Thank you.
All right.
Like I said, I'm
right.
here. You stuck with me, I'm stuck with y'all, so we cool.
Okay. Thank you again. Miss Denise Campbell, our health educator, who was our lead presenter tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Pastor, right. I'm going to let you wrap us up, man, because that's about it right there, man. I think if we try to add anything on top of that, we're going to mess the cake up, man. We're going to make it flat.
Yeah, that's right. It's just leave it to be, you know what I mean? And just appreciate, you know, everything that went on tonight for the conversation, those that was able to be a part of, man. You know, it goes, you know, to your show has always been, if you will, that you keep God first. And once you
watch
do
out.
That, you can follow him. And that's the beauty of knowing the one who made this day is worthy to be praised.
Mm.
And if I'm not ashamed of him, then I will go ahead and praise him. But if I'm ashamed of him, I would not make mention of him at all. You see? And so there's so many gifts, you know, that's been on this land tonight. And we've heard the gifts. And people are dedicated. And I would say that's good energy that came out of it tonight. So for those that didn't get a chance to tap in, maybe they'll hear about it and believe that
Absolutely.
It's okay to grab a hold of knowledge. Because, again, the word showed up said, my people of knowledge. And if there's something
Amen.
About learning, you got to have a student. And
wow.
For a student to show up, a teacher got to appear. So that's been happening tonight. Man. I just want to let you know.
Okay.
Just keep on doing what you're doing. I yield back to you
All
on
right.
that note, man.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, sir. And we'll be back, Lord willing, next Tuesday night for another episode of Talk Straight. And we'll keep it going. We'll just keep it going. Thank you again, and we'll see you all again for another episode on next week. Won't he do it? Say what now, please? Yes, he will.